Welcome, brave listeners, to another episode of Frightening Tales, the sponsor-free podcast that spooks listeners each week with another original story donated by writers from around the world. Fans of Frightening Tales are implored to go out and find more content by our weekly authors, or to share Frightening Tales with those around you. By doing so, you'll invite even more authors to want to share their tales here, and then I'll never run out of stories to read you. If you are an author with a dark piece of fiction you'd like to share with us, then please submit it through FrightingTales.com. While you're there, tap into more than 30 hours of previous content. Today's tale was written and is copyright protected by frequent submitter Vanessa Kelly Sibley. If you'd like to read more by Vanessa, look for her on Substack.com under the user at Pandora's Infinite Stories. Thanks again, Vanessa, for continuing to share your tales. Today's story is called Miss Wilkinson. Miss Wilkinson was an old lady who lived up the road from us. She had a goat and a whole bunch of chickens. Her skin was as dark as mahogany, and her eyes as white as ivory. When she hugged you, she enveloped your whole body in her arms and smelled of lavender and spices. When Miss Wilkinson was first born, they say a mob of black ravens landed on her mama's roof and screamed out every time Miss Wilkinson's mama cried out in labor. Why, the whole town of Bodie came out to watch those black ravens as they perched on the roof and trees all around. Everyone said they knew the moment when Miss Wilkinson was born. 'Cause as one, the ravens flew away, with not one black feather left to mark their having been there. They say it was a sign of things to come. Miss Wilkinson said when she was young, there used to be people who would cross the street to avoid her and Mama. Even though both were real neat and tidy ladies who went to church on most regular basis. Miss Wilkinson's mama said not to mind because she knew one day those people would be crossing the street asking Miss Wilkinson to come into their home and save one of their loved ones. Miss Wilkinson always said, love trumps fear. 'Cause you see, Miss Wilkinson was more than just a little old lady. She was a witch, a practitioner of the old ways, and she did not mind one itty bitty bit. Who knew? When I was little, at one bedtime, my mama told me a story about Miss Wilkinson, and it quickly became my favorite. Mama said folks around here would talk about when Miss Wilkinson was but 15 years of age and first showed her true self. Mrs. Cuddy near Miner's Hall was dying in childbirth with nothing to be done for the mother or baby. But in steps Miss Wilkinson straight from the field, all hot and sweaty, she heard about what was happening and thought she could help. Well, they kicked her out of the house, just like that. What would a skinny little girl from the field know about childbirth? Told her to get back to work and pay no heed to other people's business. So you know what Miss Wilkinson did? That little skinny 15-year-old girl went right around to the back of the house and climbed in through Mrs. Cuddy's bedroom window. there. The poor woman lay close to death, her own mama crying into the covers as she held one of her daughter's hands and rubbed Mrs. Cuddy's swollen belly with the other. Knowing what she was about to lose and not being able to do a darn thing for either of them. Miss Wilkinson locked the bedroom door, turned to Mrs. Cuddy's mama and said, "You ain't never to tell what I'm about to do to another living soul. Otherwise, this unborn child will die by your own hands." The next thing everyone heard was a baby. Mrs. Cuddy and her mama crying. All thanks to Miss Wilkinson. Afterwards, the skinny 15-year-old girl walked out the front door, wiping her hands clean on the Cuddy's best linen. My mama said that from that day, Miss Wilkinson never had the need to climb through a back window ever again. From then on, more and more people called for Miss Wilkinson. If births became complicated, if someone was poorly, or Daddy hurt himself bad in the field, or even if someone was just plain passing on. Go get Miss Wilkinson has been said more times in this county than most have had hot lunches. And you know, the Cuddies, they never told a soul what happened. Not even to this day. I was fascinated by Miss Wilkinson and would watch her closely if I ever saw her. To me, at 5 3/4, she was beyond beautiful. A rare diamond of interest in a world of dirt and dust. I wanted to be just like her, but I had no hopes of ever being that special. And then, Michael J. Morrison, age 9 1/2, entered my world. I was but a little baby, full of innocent wonder, but that all died the day he followed me home after school on the hot and dusty afternoon of Friday the 13th. I had no idea who he was other than we went to the same school. More importantly, I had no idea about what he was. In those days, I had at least a mile to walk home, and neither Mama nor Daddy had the luxury of time to come and collect me. I didn't mind. I liked talking to the birds and the little froggies in the creek that ran alongside our road. And as far as I was concerned, everything was interesting to look at and talk to. On that fateful Black Friday, I was halfway home and holding my best friend, Mr. Toady. He was a big, fat bullfrog who would wait for me to collect him on the way home so that I could put him in the pond near our house at night and vice versa in the morning. Mr. Toady liked getting out because he was a very social being. In fact, it was Mr. Toady who informed me that I was being followed. Turning on my heel, I looked behind me to see Michael J. Morrison standing still as a corpse in the middle of that lime dirt road. I called out to him, "You done gone the wrong way," and then pointed in the direction he should go. "You don't live down here." He stood, watching me, his lunch pail in his still hand hanging by his denim overall side, all stagnant-like. I swear, I couldn't even see him breathe. And then his mouth curled into a slithered smile, so like the devil's grin. I took a step backwards, knowing right in the center of my core, Michael J. Morrison was dangerous. I held Mr. Toady close to my chest, turned and ran as fast as I could, screaming for my daddy. When I told my mama that Michael J. Morrison had followed me home and frightened Mr. Toady and me, she said he was fooling and I shouldn't be worried. Little boys did that to get the attention of little girls they liked. That made no sense to me. If he liked me, why would he go out of his way to frighten me? Daddy said I should hit him up the nose if he got fresh. Neither of them understood. Michael J. Morrison was not who they thought him to be. The next day at school, I watched out for Michael J. Morrison. His friends were all playing like ordinary boys their age, but he just stood and watched. No matter what they did to try and encourage him to join in, he watched, as still as stone, with all the other children slowly but surely moving away from him, until he was inside a wide empty circle on the playground. I made up my mind that I would run home because I didn't want to be on the road if he decided to follow me again. Besides, Mr. Toady was safe in the pond. I told him that if a boy could be mean to a little girl, then that boy wouldn't think twice about being mean to a little froggy. Mr. Toady said that this was true and that he would wait at the pond for me to come home and tell him about my day. Well, now I got halfway home, and Michael J. Morrison was waiting for me in the middle of that road, just like before. But now, blocking my way, standing unmoving with the sun beating down on him like a musty corpse, lunch pail by his side, his ribs frozen in deathly stillness, a contorted smile gliding over his face. And then something like liquid dark brown treacle dripped out from one corner of his mouth, trickled down over his chin till it was dripping on his shirt front. By this time, I was crying for my mama, because Michael J. Morrison looked mighty famished, and I knew I couldn't get past or outrun him. Mama and Daddy wouldn't hear me scream or yell for them. We weren't close enough to home. Terror gripped my young heart. I would have no choice but to run back to school and hope teacher was still there. Before I took a step, though, the biggest black raven I'd ever seen landed on the fence next to me, making me look at the letterbox upon which he stood. Well, here's the thing. Now it was my turn to cross the street and ask Miss Wilkinson for her help. I ran as fast as I have ever run in my whole entire life, up the long gravel drive to her house, past her goat and through her chickens who didn't pay me no heed. I began banging on the front door and calling out for Miss Wilkinson, praying she'd be home. In my frenzy, I turned and saw Michael J. Morrison slowly begin to walk down the gravel driveway. Dark brown treacle now oozed out both sides of his mouth, staining the entire front of his shirt black. As part of me stood and watched myself calmly as I began screaming like a wild animal caught in a trap. Miss Wilkinson! I screeched louder. Please, Miss Wilkinson! The devil, he's coming for me, Miss Wilkinson! The big white door vibrated under my pounding fists and kicking foot. Her door opened and there she stood, looking down at me. Attired so finely in her blue dress, old stocking legs and wide apron. What's the matter, child? Why are you hollering so loud? I grabbed her hand and pointed out at Michael J. Morrison, who now stood halfway down her driveway, black oil slithering down his chin, the front of his shirt and dungaree stained black. Miss Wilkinson grabbed and pushed me behind her wide skirt. Quietly, almost at a whisper, she murmured sternly, "Come no closer. This child is with me now. You have no place here. Return, puppet, from where you came, or I will call for my shadow man to come and cut you down." Michael J. Morrison did return, just like she told him. But he did not turn by walking like an ordinary boy. He twisted from one position to the next, arms and legs moving the wrong way at the joint, as if he were being rewound backwards. His brown treacle mouth bubbled with every step taken. Finally, a globule of his poison was spat to the ground and it seared the soil, making Miss Wilkinson click her tongue in disgust. I hid in her skirts and shivered with fear. My world had changed. He was not a boy who wanted my attention. He was a boy who craved my soul, my life's blood. Michael J. Morrison wanted me dead because I had not paid enough attention in church. I was a bad child. The devil was after me because he knew my secrets. These thoughts raced through my mind, making me sob in Miss Wilkinson's skirt's soft fabric as she patted me gently on the back. After she watched the contorted puppet of Michael J. Morrison disappear down the road, Miss Wilkinson went to move us so she could close the front door, and then she stopped and watched the huge black raven land on her front porch railing. "Go see where he's gone, please, Jonathan." And with that, the colossal raven flew into the sky, following the little marionette monster. Miss Wilkinson had to pull me off her and hold me on her hip. Smothered in her soft, warm embrace, she cooed to me until I could gather my wits. Lavender and spices filled my every intaken breath, calming me quickly. After I had stopped shaking and shivering, she made me sit on her lap and have a hot cup of sweet tea. It warmed me right to my toes and made me very sleepy, and as we spoke, I snuggled into her shoulder. "Who told you I could help you, Miss Lily?" "The big old raven. He told me to run to you, ma'am." "Did he now?" I nodded. The world and my worries seemed so far away. "Jonathan, don't just talk to too many people that I'm aware of. All the animals talk to me, Miss Wilkinson. If they're in the right mood, that is. But my Mr. Toady is always ready to talk. He's gonna be worried if I don't go to the pond before bedtime and tell him all about my day." "Who be Mr. Toady now, child?" "He's my friend. He is my best friend, Miss Wilkinson. Even though he's just a big old fatty bullfrog." "Oh, now I see. We call people like Mr. Toady and Jonathan our familiars. That means animals who are our best friends." I nodded quietly, It all made sense to me. "Do you know that boy?" I nodded again. "He goes to school with me, but he ain't no boy." Miss Wilkinson took a deep breath before she sadly spoke. "No, he ain't, child. Not anymore." "Miss Wilkinson," I raised my head and looked into her beautiful dark brown eyes, "will you please come home with me and tell my mama and daddy that he's not a boy? 'Cause they don't understand like you do. And they would listen to you if you told them he's a devil. Then we could get the preacher to bless him and turn him back to a good boy." "Oh, now bless you for thinking good deeds, child." She cradled my tear-stained face in her warm hand and smiled at me. Her smooth skin wrinkled around her eyes. "I will come home with you and tell your mama and daddy they are to care for you and not trust you with no one else other than me. I will also tell them that every day after school and on Saturday mornings, you are to come to my house so I can school you in the old ways." She took a deep sigh and looked ever so sad. "But we can't save Michael, 'cause he now belongs to Damballa. Someone made that poor child into a zombie. You understand?" I nodded my head even though I didn't. "We might be able to help him a little." She brushed my hair from my face with her warm, soft hands. "But you ain't to worry about Michael. He won't be able to hurt you. I'll see to that. But little Miss Lily, you ain't to tell no one about him nor his ways, 'cause the minute you do, you'll draw his creator's attention to the person you told, and they don't have what you and I have. Michael's owner will set that poor empty boy to eat their souls from the inside out. So, no speaking about the things I teach you, or the things the animals tell you, 'cause this is our way. You understand now?" I understood. Mr. Toady and I talked about it a lot. He said the world was filled with people who couldn't, and a few who could. And if those who couldn't found out what those who could were capable of, they'd be jealous and mean. To my child's way of thinking, I did not like mean people, because they're not nice. But even as a young child, I realized those people might hurt Mr. Toady if they knew he could talk. Miss Wilkinson didn't have to explain it to me. After Miss Wilkinson spoke to my mama and daddy, they didn't quite look at me the same. It's funny. Even as a young child, you can understand that the before and after can happen in a moment. They still certainly loved me, but now they knew I was just like Miss Wilkinson. When I asked Mama if ravens had landed on our house when I was born, she said, "Certainly not." Daddy said it was too wet a day for any bird to fly, and only the bullfrogs were out and about everywhere on the lawn. And that made sense to me. But then, I had to go back to school where Michael J. Morrison was, and he no longer pretended to play with his friends. He just stood and watched me all day long. Or even worse, he followed me everywhere. I couldn't go anywhere without him being there, standing still, looking at me, counting on the possibility of a day when he could get me. Every day after school, I would quietly walk home with Michael J. Morrison walking 10 steps behind me. And 'cause we were alone, he'd be drooling his disgusting treacle slobber down his face. Miss Wilkinson said she was just waiting for things to be right, 'cause he was old magic, dark magic, and that took time to deal with. She needed to find out who owned Michael so he could have some chance of helping him. I knew she was doing her best, but it didn't make my days filled with Michael following me and watching me any better. Sometimes I just wanted Miss Wilkinson to call for her shadow man and be done with this horrible monster. But then I'd feel real bad, 'cause what if the real Michael was still inside somewhere? All that changed when I woke up with the full moon shining through the pitch black night, illuminating Michael at the end of my bed. He glowed all white like meat with the blood washed out, all except for his black mouth and chin. His eyes were cold and glazed over like he were blind. I wanted to cry out for my daddy, but I didn't, 'cause I knew. I knew no one could help me. Pulling up my covers over my head, I began to cry. "Go away, Michael, go away." Michael's quiet footsteps took him to the head of my bed, where he stood milk-eyed and bubbling mouth. That was enough for me to leave my dolly and teddy behind as I quietly wriggled right down to the end of my bed, then to the side, and then off and under it. As I curled under the springs, a child's sad, broken-hearted voice echoed out into my room. "Lily? Lily, is that you? Help me, Lily. I'm cold. I'm so cold. I want my mom, Lily. Help me, Lily." I paused and felt almost crushed by the sadness of his voice. Then, before I had time to move, Michael J. Morrison's hands were on my bed where I had laid moments ago. Wrapping his hands around the lump of my teddy bear, he began strangling the sheets, shaking the bed so hard and fast it felt like a freight train was moving through my room. And all I wanted to do was scream and scream and scream for my daddy. But I didn't. Instead, I whispered, "Miss Wilkinson, help me." I called for her over and over again with my eyes shut tight. "Miss Wilkinson, Miss Wilkinson, send your shadow man, send your shadow man, send your shadow man." Michael J. Morrison drew out a shiny knife from his boot and began stabbing at my bedding. Through tears and bubbling saliva, I cried quietly, "Shadow man, shadow man, I want the shadow man." I have never wished for anything harder since that day, and to my great relief, the darkness under my bed pooled and gathered from underneath me, slipping like the softest silk into a space next to me. Taking form, it twisted and swirled until my shadow man settled an arrangement of great comfort. My daddy's shadow lay with me under my bed and slowly lifted his finger to his mouth, indicating I should be quiet. I nodded with eyes as wide as saucers before my Shadow Man slithered out behind Michael J. Morrison. I crept out the other side and stood with just the bed between us. After this night, I needed to know that Michael wouldn't be worrying me anymore. Michael? I quivered. Is any of you still inside your body? His little boy's voice slipped out past the bubbling treacle. I'm cold, Lily. I'm so cold. Poison dripped from his mouth into my bed covers, staining them midnight. Why did you take my mom from me? I don't know who your mama is, Michael. My shadow man grew tall, raising his right arm, ready to slash down and slice Michael into a thousand pieces right where he stood. A sad and frightened soul echoed out from the dead corpse in front of me. Daddy, said the witch, needs to pay. She can't have a child like her if we can't have Mama. Michael shivered and shook as the shadow man readied himself. I'm so cold, Lily. I'm so cold. Make it stop. Why did the witch make a choice between my mama and me? She should me die, not mama. Michael, did your daddy do this to you? In the darkness, Michael nodded slowly, his milk eyes never letting go of their gazed grip on my face, until he turned and looked at my shadow man. Do it, Lily. I'm so tired. Miss Wilkinson was right, though. There's no killing a child of Damballa. I began to cry because it was going to either be me or Michael who walked away from tonight. I couldn't rescue him and send him home to the angels. There was no way to end a zombie. A familiar voice called out through my window. Mr. Toady. Michael. Reaching for my jewelry box, which took pride of place on my bedside table, and emptying the contents quickly to the floor, I then continued speaking to the boy zombie with excitement. I can't help you get back to your mama, but I can make sure you're safe. You can be my friend forever if you like, and your daddy won't be able to hurt you no more. Would you like that, Michael? The zombie nodded once more, his eyes never leaving my face. My shadow man, pull Michael's heart out of his chest and put it in my jewelry box, please. Without the moment passing, my shadow man reached over Michael's shoulder and thrust his hand up and under the boy's ribcage. Michael shuddered and grasped onto his arm, trying to pull him out, but it was too late. My protector was too strong. My shadow man rummaged and then pulled again as Michael held his arm, scratching and clawing away at his dark form with his cold white fingers. The struggle continued until, from a black hole in Michael's chest, his heart, all black and treacled, was pulled and presented to me. The poison poured down over my shadow man's hand and arm and onto my bed. Into the box, please. And with that, Michael's heart was gently placed into my jewelry box. I'll put cooking salt on it when we're done. Mama won't mind. I smiled at the still-standing Michael, who looked nothing more than an empty doll. You can come and rest in my pond with my best friend, Mr. Toady. He and all his children will keep you safe, Michael. Don't you worry. You can lie down in the soft silt and dream of your mama and feel happy all the time. Your daddy won't ever be able to hurt you no more, 'cause you're mine now, and I won't let him. Michael nodded and followed me out of the window and down to the pond, with my shadow man following close behind. I watched Michael walk into the depths of the pond. Miss Wilkinson came out from the darkness, humming herself a happy tune. "I'm sorry, ma'am. I couldn't help him." Little Miss Lily, I am so proud of you." "Why, Miss Wilkinson? I didn't rescue Michael, and I didn't give you enough time to cure him from his dark magic." Miss Wilkinson picked me up and held me on her hip as we watched the last of Michael disappear under the water. She took a quick look inside my jewelry box. "Plenty of salt on that one, with a little nutmeg will do the trick." She clicked her tongue. "I'm proud of you, little girl, simply because the first lesson of any witch learning is that you have to deal with things by yourself." She smiled and brushed a stray strand of hair from my face. "Everyone calls a witch when no one else will come, when there's no hope left. So a proper witch must believe to their core that they can help people by themselves, because often there is no one else left to help." A warm lavender embrace filled my heart with pride. As she stood straight, Miss Wilkinson's praise continued. "There was no saving Michael. His daddy saw to that. But what you did tonight, at the ripe old age of 5 3/4, will give his soul some kind of rest. And you did it all by yourself." I smiled, watching my shadow man slink back into my bedroom window, and I expect as he disappeared into my room under my bed. "Will Michael be all right?" "Yes, I presume so." Miss Wilkinson turned to my house and began walking us both to the front porch. "The cold silt will keep him fresh and soft and growing. Then when you require him, you can call him up to do your bidding. 'Cause every good witch needs a backup plan. And nowadays, for me, witching can sometimes be lonely. But I am lucky. I have Michael and Mr. Toady." Miss Wilkinson was right. The cold pond silt and my bullfrogs take good care of him, and he's grown into a fine young man. On my 16th birthday, he requested 2 things, a kiss and the chance to square up with his daddy. Who was I to say no to one of my best friends? And so, in turn, both wishes were granted. Miss Wilkinson died at the ripe old age of 91. Along with everyone she ever helped in Bodie, I was there with her and Jonathan during her gentle passing. Some might have thought it strange that a skinny 16-year-old girl prepared Miss Wilkinson's body for a final resting place. But as I said to those people who dared question me, in times of need, witches can only rely on themselves or other witches. So, you tend to your business, and I'll tend to mine. Some people now cross the street to avoid me, but I don't mind, 'cause one day they'll invite me into their home to care for their loved ones in a time of need. As my beloved Miss Wilkinson always said, love trumps fear.
Thank you, brave listeners, for joining me on another episode. You've been listening to Ms. Wilkinson by Vanessa Kelly Sibley. Frightening Tales is a sponsor-free show whose mission is to share horror with the fans of horror. That's you. If you've enjoyed the stories you hear on my program, please delve into more work by these talented authors and buy their books at your local bookstore. If you'd like to show off your fan appreciation for Frightening Tales, purchase a shirt, stickers, or other swag and go forth as my army of walking billboards. Or if in the least, spread the word. Do tune in again next Friday for another Frightening Tale, if you're brave enough.